From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
The Kansas City Chiefs have parted ways with their longest tenured player in franchise history. The day has come. Dustin Colquitt has been released by the Kansas City Chiefs after a late night Instagram post where Colquitt bemused the fact that it had not been necessarily a happy parting, that he had wanted to work something out, or to the effect of such. That isn't a quote. It is the result that Dustin Colquitt, who has played 15 years in Kansas City and has the record for most actual games played in the Kansas City Chiefs uniform, is no longer a Kansas City Chief. Whether he chooses to retire or he pursues other options within the NFL is still out there and remains to be seen. I'm going to talk more about that with Matt Derrick, who's coming up on the show here in the second and third segments, but I want to jump over to another topic because a lot of you have had questions about it, and I thank you all for calling me out on a mistake that I've made. Lucas Niang's injury is a labrum, but I watched Niang early in the season. You all know how much work goes on during the NFL season. He was one of the players on my watch list from before, and so I actually took a look at his games in September. Got to look at him very early. And when he had the injury, I either wrote it down wrong or read an early report and didn't get it right and listed it as a shoulder injury, not a hip injury, which is what it actually was. And so in my notes this whole entire offseason, I've been proceeding under the concept that Lucas Niang had a shoulder labrum injury repair. And that is not the case. It is a hip injury. A lot of you have reached out to me on social networks in the comments on YouTube. I appreciate that getting me updated, letting me get that correction. I do apologize for making that mistake, but we need to discuss what it really means as well. I was pretty concerned about a shoulder labrum because it is an intense injury in what is a difficult thing to overcome with strength and power, etc. A hip labrum is much different. Yes, it's the same kind of injury to a different joint. The difference is that the hip joint is inherently much, much more stable. It is a simple ball and socket joint. It does not have the floating pieces in the clavicle and the scapula and all the rotator cuff muscles, which is really what holds together a shoulder joint. It's the shoulder is much more susceptible to re-injury, to catastrophic injury, and to a laxness in that repaired labrum that leads to something going wrong over and over and over. A hip, on the other hand, especially in the kind of athlete that Lucas Niang is, a lineman, somebody with a lot of girth in their musculature below the waist, in the hips from the glutes on down to the hamstrings, as well as the quadriceps, having that repair on a hip labrum offers you the added stability of having all that muscle tissue built around it to help solidify and stabilize that joint. So once you're past post-op and you've gone through your rehab and the healing has happened and you have the range of motion, all that musculature actually goes on to stabilize and make that injury less susceptible over time. Like any other injury, the more time that passes, the more that it heals and the less susceptible that you are. Now, that doesn't mean it can't reoccur. Some people do have a congenital, a DNA-based propensity to rips off tissues like labrums. There's no indication of that with Niang. There's no way actually to measure that I'm aware of. So I don't think that there's any long-term question mark about that. So in the end, I actually feel better about this injury history with him than I did during the draft. And consequently, he was drafted right where I had him, but I'm actually a lot more optimistic about his long-term projection than I was a few days ago. So again, thank you all, the fans who pointed that out for me. And hey, every now and then I have to make a hiccup. We'll recover and we'll move on. When we get back, we're going to talk about Dustin Colquitt. We have to, with Matt Derrick, a guy who's been in the locker room with him a number of times and has some insights on him.
You can find our gear for you and your loved ones at the new Teespring store. Put Locked On Chiefs on your back. You can find all of our gear from Locked On Chiefs and RGR. Just search Teespring and RGR or click the link in the description.
And after a long nap, after a hugely long weekend, we are back and got Matt Derrick back. Thanks for all the stream action, Matt. I know it was a super busy time, but I appreciate it. And thanks for coming back today.
Yeah, no problem. It was a long weekend, but yeah, had a lot of fun over the weekend. So hopefully everybody enjoyed it.
Knock on wood. A lot to talk about with the draft choices and everything actually since then, because we haven't spoken since the Bo Peep and all the UDFAs. We'll get to that in the third segment. We got to start with the big story and then a slightly smaller story. Dustin Colquitt kind of lets the cat out of the bag in a late night Instagram post that he is leaving the Chiefs. They followed up. They did release him. It was not a retirement. Does this surprise you? Was there any inclination of this coming?
It wasn't terribly surprising after they go out and sign Tommy Townsend from Florida as an undrafted free agent on Saturday and gave him a third punter on the roster. That happens. You automatically start questioning about, you know, what's going to happen there. So that was kind of the first signal that maybe this was coming. I'm still surprised about how it went down. You would have thought that, you know, especially with the outpouring from the Chiefs about how much they love the guy, that they would have figured out a way to try and keep him and maybe bring that cap number down. So we don't know really what went on between the two sides. Clearly, it wasn't what Dustin Colquitt wanted to have happen. The Chiefs obviously wanted ready to go in a different direction. They do save some money against the cap with the move. That's probably at least the biggest part of it right now. And you know what? Maybe it is reflective of the fact that with this team, with this offense, you know, the punter is a little bit less valuable and they just don't see the need to spend as much money on him as they did in the past.
Well, and I share that view, but let's come back to that because the way that it went down, I'm glad that you brought that up because I read into that initial post, even the word pleading was in there. So it makes me feel like somewhere along the way, Colquitt was ready to do what it needed to be done to stay, like you said, to get that cap number down because just quite frankly, they don't use him enough. But does that mean, in your perspective, does that mean that it's just the point where the guy's 37 years old, he's been here 15 years, and no matter what they reduce it to, the team just feels that they have to get all the cash that they can in order to move forward?
I think that's certainly part of it because they are absolutely at a point right now where, you know, every dollar counts. I mean, you know, it's getting to that point. And so, yeah, I mean, this was a, you know, it's a significant savings. I mean, you're going to save more than $2 million by replacing him with someone that's going to be making closer to the league minimum. Yeah. And even if, you know, Colquitt were willing to discuss, you know, coming down to the closer to the veteran minimum, you know, that's still a few $100,000 above what the Chiefs could spend with a first or a second year guy. We'll see. I mean, there's always a possibility that it could bite them that, you know, at some point that there's going to be a mistake made in special teams. It's going to come down to, you know, not having an experienced holder and a puncher anymore. But yeah, I mean, it's every dollar counts for this team right now. And this is the first move really that I think underscores it because, you know, so far this offseason has all been about some renegotiations, moving some money around, keeping some guys on the cheap. But this one was certainly about, you know, moving on from a longtime veteran that you got a close relationship and it really all about the money.
Yeah, I think it comes down to two things. I mean, one, they just don't use him enough. In 2016, he had 80 punts on the season. Last year, he had 56. I mean, it's just the value for how many times he's on the field, at least punting, isn't there. But I do feel like one thing that they have to be very careful about is the holding aspect. Do you think that that's more important at this point?
I mean, I think it's one of the most important jobs on the team. I mean, if you don't have a reliable holder, a lot can go very, very poorly. And yeah, I mean, you know, people devalue field goals and probably extra points in this day and age. But you know what? You don't really miss that kind of reliability until it's gone. And you might very well miss that. And with the two guys they're bringing in, I mean, looking at the cursory film, I believe that Townsend has held quite a bit down in Florida. I'm not sure that Newsom's done any when he was at Notre Dame. Probably did a little bit last year in the NFL training camp. So we'll see about how those two guys develop. But it's whoever wins the job, it's going to come down to kicking and, you know, whether they can be reliable and kick the way that Dave Tobe wants guys to kick, which, you know, I mean, they look for specific things out of their special teams game.
Yeah, the hang time is always the stat that hits me the most. Colquitt has always been amongst the top of the league in that particular category, and that allows your coverage to play and do what it needs to do. I'll be religious to see if this turns into a true battle or not. You're feeling at the get-go, 1 year of experience, does that really give somebody the upper hand?
Not sure it really does. I mean, it certainly can't hurt, but you know, Townsend's got a pretty good pedigree. And, you know, and you got to feel that for an undrafted free agent, for someone who was considered one of, you know, top punters coming into the league this year, that signing with Kansas City, he's got had to have a little bit of confidence that this is a job that he feels like he can win.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, it goes hand in hand with what we found out. The cap saving seems to be what's at the heart of this, value versus return. And we did find out some numbers on Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's restructure, and it confused the heck out of me out of initial reports. But can you explain to us what this means in terms of savings and what it is now?
Yeah, the Chiefs are going to save about $3.5 million, a little bit under that for 2020. I'm going to drop down his cap number from, I think it was about 8.95, somewhere around there. It's going to drop down to 5.5 for 2020. The other interesting thing that they did is apparently the last 2 years of the deal for 21 and 22 are voidable years now. So that usually means that there is something in the contract that is a very, very reachable incentive. Usually it's just being on a roster. That means if LDT meets that, he's going to become a free agent next year. And those last 2 years will go away in the contract. He was previously under contract for two more seasons. So, yeah, it certainly looks like that, you know, part of the deal is giving a little bit of, you know, salary cap relief this year. They're going to take on a little bit more of a cap hit for, you know, letting him go next year when he becomes a free agent, which looks like a foregone conclusion at this point. But that's what, you know, they kind of pick up and gain for being able to get the cap relief this year.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway, too, the voidability. And in his particular case, he's such a unique person. I know there was a big story on SI this week about him and how he's dealing with the COVID pandemic and having those dual roles and having this been his second contract. Now, he's well into the midpoint of his career. I don't know that stretching towards a third is something the Chiefs were terribly interested in, but knowing that he has this other important vocation that he can go to, do you think that that eases the burden on both of them at looking at the end of the road for his tenure in Kansas City?
I mean, it could be, but you know, I think it's going to end up working really well probably for LDT, because at least if this is the case, then, you know, he's going to be hitting free agency again. I'm trying to remember when he turns 30. I mean, it's within the next year, but, you know, he might be still 29 when he's out looking for a new deal. So, you know, that's the right age. I mean, you know, it would be tougher for him if he's out at, you know, age 31, 32, looking for a long-term free agent deal. For him, it really benefits him to be able to go out and hit the market, you know, a little bit earlier. And for the Chiefs, I mean, I think it underscores that 2020 is all in. I mean, they are shoving all their chips on this season and trying to run it back and get another championship, because they are going to be replacing a lot of bodies in 2021. And I think when you look at the guard position in particular, you see that. I mean, they draft Lucas Niang and they're talking about giving him a shot to win a guard spot. They go out and, you know, spend some money and undrafted free agents on Yasir Durant, who they're talking about, you know, playing guard. They did the same thing with Darrell Williams from Mississippi State. He's a guy who can play center and guard. They drafted Nick Allegretti last year. I mean, they've got a lot of numbers that they are throwing and some resources that they are throwing at that guard position, trying to find not just a left guard for 2020, but both positions for 2021.
When we come back, we'll dig more into that depth chart as well as what we saw from the other signings. I'm glad that you brought it up, and I talked earlier about how I mistakenly had the injury to Niang as a shoulder labrum. It's not. It's a hip labrum, which makes his long-term outlook a little bit better, in my opinion.
Those two labrums are really confusing.
Yeah.
The human body has too many labrums.
You're only born with four. I got to make them work. So, but to me, it's real interesting that they have said that he can compete, because I don't see him as the kind of athlete that will flip sides very easily over to the left. I know that's always difficult for rookies. And especially what the labrum did to him last season in terms of degrading his movement skills a little bit. Hopefully, like, I think you were actually the one that asked him on his press conference. He's at 100% according to him, right?
Yeah. I mean, he says he's 100%, that he finished up his last rehab last month, and that when and if they get on the field for workouts and for training camp, he says he's not going to be restricted. I mean, we'll see if that holds true, if they work him in, you know, gently. But yeah, I think the other big takeaway is the fact that they are talking about, you know, maybe trying him at guard first, and with the idea that maybe he could get some experience there and then later kick out the tackle. Because right now the Chiefs have a need at guard. They don't have a huge one at tackle. It's certainly not from a starting standpoint. But hey, if they feel like that getting him into the lineup and just getting some experience would help him in making the transition to eventually move up to tackle, it's probably, I mean, it's worth a shot. But I still go back to the numbers. I mean, at this point, they really need to, they've got some starting positions inside they've got to figure out. And right now, I don't think that you definitively say that they have a left guard starting for next year, and they certainly don't have one for next season.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting competition and quite a bit of overturn. But like you said, the majority of the reserves now are pretty young. So I think that loads them up for the future. And I think it's all related to the Mahomes contract that's coming, trying to squeeze out, being all in this year for his what's going to be the last year of him on the cheap. A couple of other things that happened since we were on the live stream, trading back in to get Bo Pete Keys. That was just a market value move, right?
Yeah, I mean, that really looks like it was, they get into the seventh round, and here's a guy that they felt like, had he had a chance to test at the combine, had he had a pro day, that he might have gone a lot higher than that. And so they see, by giving up even a sixth round pick in 2021, they feel like, hey, here's a guy that we think had a higher value than even that. And, you know, and the machinations of it too, with the fact that when they didn't have that sixth and the seventh round pick, they were able to go out and start talking to agents and trying to work on potential free agent deals. And it became quickly clear to them that Bo Pete Keys, they were not going to be able to sign as an undrafted free agent. There was just going to be too much competition, and just it was going to be a bidding war they could not win, as Willie Davis put it. So they trade back in, they get him, and then that frees them up also to then go out and get a lot of other guys that they target as undrafted free agents. So they kind of killed two birds with one stone there, and that they were able to get a guy that they really wanted, and then they were able to kind of save their powder for going out and getting some other guys in that free agency period.
Now, I know you have the whole UDFA class listed out on ChiefsDigest.com, but what are a couple of your takeaways of that group after they got the Keys thing done?
A decent amount of speed. Quite a few guys that can return kicks. I mean, you know, from a wide receiver standpoint, I'm not sure that many of them outside of, and I've only read about Maurice French. I assume he pronounces it French. I haven't seen differently. You know, he's had some great production. So, you know, you do think that maybe that's a guy that they could develop as a receiver. But the kid from Harvard that went to Vanderbilt, Shelton Mosley, prolific returner. There's some other guys, Aleva Hifo, he can return kicks. So, and those guys are all in kind of, to me, the maybe DeAnthony Thomas mold as far as, you know, what they would be on offense and as a returner. So it's certainly a lot of athleticism, certainly a lot of upside. Maybe guys who were, they went with two different directions. I mean, certainly they targeted, I think, four or five guys who were the top players at their position. And then they really went for some guys who were maybe overlooked, but have a lot of value. Because, you know, there were some guys they picked up that I'm not sure were on a lot of people's radars.
There were several that were not on mine at all. Couple of takeaways. You mentioned Durant from Missouri. Davis from Auburn. I think they're two of the bigger names in terms of people, players that people may have seen on television. Any instincts about how many of these guys actually have a shot at the 53? I don't see that many spots available.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, usually no more than maybe a couple of these guys really get a shot to make it. And especially for a team that's a Super Bowl championship team, it's going to be even more difficult. The one advantage you get, you do have the expanded practice squad this year. So, you know, you are looking at maybe some of these guys being able to stick around that way. And there's a few positions. I mean, yeah, Davis is a guy I think who could compete for a position. The guys, like I mentioned, the guys that are, you know, potential returners, I think they could, you know, compete for maybe a spot if they can win a kick return or a punt return position. The offensive line guys, I think, are, you know, the both of them, Durant and Williams, are guys that they really do like. The Chiefs lack a little bit of numbers at linebacker, so maybe those guys can compete too. I think there's some opportunities, and I think you're going to see a lot of these guys stick around with the team through that practice squad. It's going to be an uphill battle for any of them to make this team because there's just not a lot of spots available.
Well, I appreciate that insight, and I think it's going to be an interesting competition. Folks, we'll have Matt back tomorrow, and we'll go over a couple of things of what this all means. But for today, I want to say thank you to all of you who were on the live streams on RGR all weekend. Hope you had a good time. Thank you for listening to this show that we do all the time, both Chris and I, kind of taking shifts currently. And I want to say thank you to everybody who bought the NFL Draft Guide from RAC or the Athletic Matrix. You can still get those. I'm going to discount them starting today. If you just want to check out some of the guys that the Chiefs ended up selecting or for any other team. So thank you for everything, and we'll check with you tomorrow. Ryan Tracy is the founder of Rogue Analytics and the host of RGR Football on YouTube. Follow him there. Chris Clark is a senior analyst at ChiefsDigest.com, where you can get his work. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you for listening.